Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
You got it now?
Hey, everybody. Sorry about that little glitch there. I don't know what happened, but we couldn't connect to the radio from my side, so we had to... Fortunately, DB's on the line tonight, so he was able to hook us up. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Sorry for the two-minute delay there. It looks like DB's also going to have to be managing the calls, too.
All right.
So this is a little new for us. I mean, we'll see what happens. Maybe we can get it fixed by the end of the show. We will be having some callers later today, though, tonight, to talk about a few different things. One of them is going to be that video that was taken at the pool party down in Texas, and you know the repercussions from that and what's going on with that. We have Andrew Demeter is going to join us with some exclusive information about what's going on there. But for anyone that hasn't joined us prior to tonight, make sure you check us out 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. We have different hosts, same time, same place. And you can hear a bunch of different perspectives. We have a bunch of different people that call in. We have a bunch of different guests that join the show as well in studio and from abroad. And we really try to shake it up a little bit, bring some different information all the time. And if you want to join the conversation tonight, feel free to call in. We have a phone number, 718-717-8296. You could join us either that way or through Skype, the anti-media, and you can join us that way as well. So there's all kinds of stuff going on, and the first thing I want to get into before we start getting our callers on the line is you know, what's going on with this $8.5 billion that's missing from the Pentagon. And this is just, I mean, this is crazy. Like, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? How is there $8.5 trillion missing from, you know, the Pentagon? Like, where's the accountability? You know what I mean? I mean, this is like an unfathomable amount of money. It's, well, insane.
All you have to do is just research Able Danger, which was kind of closing in on the money trail as far as the missing $2.3 trillion during 9/11. And you can kind of see how it compounded once people doing the investigations, the financial investigations, realized they could literally be blown up if they got too close to the trail. Because that's really, in essence, what happened. You had the entire accounting firm of the Pentagon all killed and everybody else was untouched.
Yeah, I mean, that happened back, what, in 2001 and stuff, and that was sketchy at the time. And then we have this, you know, new revelation now, and this is coming from Reuters. So this is a kind of a mainstream newswire kind of site. So it's pretty interesting that they're talking about it, but it's definitely pretty big, man. I mean, and like all of this $8.5 trillion has, you know, it's only been in the last like 20 years. It's been since 1996.
Where this money has
accumulated. It's crazy.
And I think they were able to track a lot of that, Nick, to black ops and clandestine operations around the world. And, you know, it's a fleecing, really. When you think about that, the United States has, you know, multiple trillions of dollars of natural assets, yet we spend about 50% of our wages on taxes and really get very little in return except our roads. Well, you have to wonder where it's going. I mean, these are going to underground bases. These are going to reverse engineering, probably old Nazi tech still. This is going to everything you could think of, biological engineering. And people cannot be made privy to it.
Yeah, man, and that's exactly why this is such a huge topic, because, you know, $8.5 trillion, I mean, there's almost an unimaginable amount of things that can be done with that kind of money, you know, and there's no telling what kind of programs or what kind of deeds that this money has gone to do. I mean, it's just, you know, for all we know, it's just disappeared, and it's $8.5 trillion bucks over 20 years. I mean, it's crazy. There's nothing that – you can't even compare that to really, you know, anything.
There's a story I remember reading about how one of Saddam's handlers showed up with $4 billion in cash, the printing press, Nick, you know, and said, buy all our defense contractors' weapons and go to war with Iran. We'll just keep feeding you this cash. That's what black ops is.
Definitely. And so, you know, seeing all these conflicts going on right now, whether we're talking about, I mean, if we're talking about since 96, this includes the Iraq War. This includes Afghanistan. I mean, all the stuff that was off the books is probably jumbled in with this $8.5 trillion. And then you got all these other ongoing conflicts right now when you know, considering Ukraine, Syria, Libya, you know, Egypt, the Arab Spring, all this stuff, man, there's probably been a lot of money funneled in there as well, just as it was to Saddam's handlers and stuff back in the day. I mean, they're probably still doing that right now as we speak, by the tune of, you know, by looking at the number, the $8.5 trillion, I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars pretty much daily, you know what I mean, that's being funneled into, you know, these off-the-books type of deals or, you know, whatever they're doing with it.
And people know where it's going. They've been able to forensically backtrack this stuff. The problem is they keep getting assassinated, or they keep taking jobs as lobbyists, so they keep getting sweetheart gigs somewhere else, settlements, and then disappearing to the Caribbean. That's the name of the game. So until it hits the average American right in the face, and I mean, like, maybe one day they're all, well, everybody in the U.S. owes 75 grand or you go to debtor's prison. That's the kind of reality that would shake the foundation and let people know exactly how mismanaged our extremely wealthy country is right now.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's kind of sickening, you know, to look at it. If you look at the point made by Claire, which is one of our new journalists, which she joined us on the radio a few weeks ago, and she's been doing an awesome job on the anti-media with her articles, and they're just really, really great articles. And in the closing of this article, I'm just going to quote from the article here. As of 2013, there were about 45.3 million people, including 14.7 million children, living in poverty in the U.S., 14.5% of the population, which is the largest number in the 52 years such statistics have been kept. But instead of focusing sharp criticism on the causes for such an outrageous number, politicians target wasteful spending by food stamp recipients by passing into law prohibitions for purchasing items like steak. But if members of Congress find a steak wasteful, what about 22,437 superfluous Humvee front ends? So, you know, and this is referencing one of these crazy budgetary, you know, lapses that these guys had, accounting lapses, is where they literally had 22,000 extra, you know, parts to these Humvees that they weren't even using, and then they ordered more. And I mean, this kind of stuff just adds up and adds up. And we just recently saw the news about all those Humvees getting taken by ISIS over there in Iraq. I think it's around 3,000 Humvees now have been captured by ISIS. It's a staggering number. And you can't help but think that a lot of that equipment as well was, you know, black budget, off the books type of equipment that was put over there for the warlords or for whoever.
And even if it was legit and we just left it there, I mean, can somebody take a battery out? I mean, what are these all fully gassed up and ready to go just with the flip switch to turn it on? I mean, how do these fools hotwire 2,300 Humvees with satellite, you know, transponders on them? So it makes me think, you know, the propaganda goes both ways. Oh, my God, ISIS has 2,300 of our old Humvees. Yet every one of them's got a marker, Nick, and everyone's targeted for an airstrike, and it's just part of the bigger game. I mean, people get freaked out by it, but it's never going to spread more than they want it to because they created it, they control it, and they're using it for profit. That's all it is.
Yeah, man, and that's why you see all this money being funneled over there and all this stuff. And, you know, the whole Benghazi cover-up and stuff, it's all a bigger cover for the really nasty things they were doing over there with funneling weapons from out of Libya into Syria and stuff like that. And, of course, Fox News has turned it into this big, you know, thing about the guy that died at the embassy, a couple guys that died. But the big story, I mean, there's a reason that story is the one that's always being talked about and not what actually happened, which is, you know, this crazy arms dealing and things like that over there during the fall of Gaddafi and the rise of the, you know, the fighters in Syria, which from the beginning, you know, the Syrian civil war, it's something that we funded and fueled. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we see coming back now and turning into ISIS and coming back. And it's this bad policy that comes back and bites you. Now it's bad for the American people because we gotta foot the bill for all this stuff, right? But you know, it's kind of in the end, and it's so crazy to think about it this way. Is like this is probably at least partially the intended outcome for a lot of these people that make the policy or the lobbyists, and of course the industry that benefit from all this tension and all this, you know, global proxy warfare and stuff like that. This is probably the intended outcome. I mean, in that declassified report from the Pentagon that we posted about it late last week, which is from 2012, you know, and the intelligence services, the U.S. intelligence services basically, you know, they already predicted that ISIS was, you know, an Islamic state, a quote-unquote Islamic state could possibly rise out of all the disarray that's going on over there because of the Syrian civil war and because of the strife in Iraq and all that stuff. They kind of predicted that that stuff was going to happen. And they also said, well, this could work in our advantage because then we could use those people to overthrow Assad. You know, and so then you start getting back to the real agenda, and you know, the agenda is very geopolitically motivated and stuff, and it all circles back to this crazy Pentagon report. DB, keep an eye out for a contact request from Andrew Demeter.
Got it, Nick. Nobody yet.
All right, cool. He's we're gonna bring him on here in a few minutes.
Yep, because he's got the scoop on the hot button issue right now, which is, I mean, where are we gonna draw a line as to what people can get away with, and also what exactly happened at that complex to make it such an insane situation. Because there's a different side to every story. There's a million sides saying, oh, it's private and some DJ charged money and blew it up with hundreds of people at a private pool and it got out of control, and other people saying, nah, it was chill. Then the cops showed up because there's some, you know, racist old people there that were getting pissed off, and they made it into something it wasn't. And you know what? It's probably somewhere in the middle, but slanted towards the fact that cops honestly just it's just too much. There's nothing left to say really new about it, except dude should be fired. Dude should probably have to defend himself in a court of law as a civilian. When these cops go so off the reservation, I don't understand why the thin blue line just becomes the non. There's no line anymore for these guys. This is unconscionable.
Yeah, exactly. And so hopefully what we're going to talk to Andrew about is, you know, getting down to the truth of the matter, because he does have a great interview with the kid that actually took the video at the pool party. And of course, there's a huge rumor mill going around. I don't know if you noticed today, but there's a bunch of protests going on down in McKinney, Texas, which is where all this stuff went down. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to try to figure out what is actually happening over there, because there's always so many different theories and things swirling around. But the one thing that I did notice for sure, sorry about that. I think we're having a little technical difficulties. You there, DB? I don't know if DB's there. Yeah, we're having some problems. I don't know why, but when I went to set this up at the beginning, the internet wasn't working or something wasn't working. But anyway, I think we're back on air now, and we're gonna try to get DB back on.
All right, Nick. Here we go.
You there?
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on.
All right, yeah, because I'm normally one that hosts the calls, and since my internet failed me epically right as the show was starting, you're hosting for the first time. But anyway, I'm going to get Andrew to call back in, and make sure you add him to the group chat, the group call.
Yep, will do. I have no idea what's going on. I just was in the middle of a crash.
I think we're both of our internets are crashing on us. There is an interesting story I do want to talk about about the internet too after we get done talking to Andrew. It's basically about this project that Elon Musk is working towards, and I know he's kind of a polarizing figure, and you know, he's got some controversial views. I think he's a pretty smart guy, but he's working on building a decentralized internet platform for like satellite, you know, satellite provided internet for like really cheap, and hopefully it'll help people get around a lot of the censorship that goes on at the, you know, distribution level of the internet. You know, there was that huge debate about net neutrality and all that stuff. You know, it all comes down to this issue at the root of it is, you know, is basically the over-centralization, you know, of the, it's the over-centralization of the internet distribution that is the real issue. And I think this idea is going to be pretty, I mean, pretty influential, pretty big when it comes down to, you know, working around these very highly controlled situations. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later. I think we're finally joined by Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Sorry, we had a few technical difficulties, of course.
No worries. I know how
It's actually pretty rare for us now, but my internet decided to crash on me right before I had to host the call, so DB had to host it, and he's never done that before.
Well, gotta love the NSA.
Yeah, that's an ironic way to remain positive about this whole situation. Anyway, you got a great interview, yes. And I don't know the kid's name, but you got a great interview with the kid that was down there in McKinney, Texas, that took the video of that cop that was just completely out of control. And I'm sure most people listening tonight have seen the video and saw the way that guy was manhandling, you know, teen girls in a very physical way, and I think in a very abusive and excessive way. But there's so many different people talking about so many different things, and there's a bunch of rumors and myths going around about what actually happened down there, and there must have been a reason why the cop was acting that way, this, that, and the other. So Andrew, we were hoping that maybe you could dispel some of the myths, and maybe, you know, after speaking to the kid that took the video, maybe you could let us know what is actually going on down there.
Well, Nick, I think it's important to say first off that I was not there. So, you know, what I can, you know, bring to the conversation is just what the media is telling me. And, you know, that's always skewed and everything, and everyone has their own biases. So, but what I did learn from talking with Brandon Brooks, that's the name of the kid who was filming the video, who I had interviewed, and he had told me that, long story short, it was the last day of high school for, you know, his school in McKinney, Texas. And so a couple kids at his school had planned via social media to have a pool party at a local neighborhood. And this was a neighborhood that many of the kids attending the party were actually a part of, according to Brandon. So the kids go there, and, you know, obviously all these kids going into a private neighborhood pool, all the parents who were there, or at least most of them, were pretty upset. And it's also worth noting that many of the people that you see in the video were Black, were African American. And, you know, making it into something all about race, we can get into that at a later time. But long story short, these people were, these, you know, parents were upset that the kids were coming into the pool. So, then one of the mothers who was in the neighborhood, she was somehow, according to Brandon, who I talked to, got into some, you know, racial argument with one of the kids there. And then apparently, according to Brandon again, the mother pulled the hair of the one child, and they got into a huge physical fight. And then as a result of that, the police were called, and then basically that, to my understanding, is where the video that you see picks up and all the, you know, violence ensues.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, this story had a lot of like shock value, because the video is pretty graphic, and it's kind of one of those scenarios where it's kind of overwhelming, especially if you're in the situation. Now, I did watch the video, and I watched your interview. And you know, the kid that was filming definitely had some insight into, you know, what was going on, and I think definitely it does, you know, show that there is a lot of racial bias, you know, perpetuating through these police departments and the way that they went about what they're doing. I mean, the racism, the guy doesn't have to be wearing a hood and being part of the KKK to do it. You know, it's more subtle than that most times. And that's something too, I think, that now we're starting to see these protests today, and I don't know if you saw them, but there is a big, you know, pretty big movement now growing out of what happened down there in McKinney, Texas, because a lot of people feel that it was wrong, and it was a very, you know, racist situation that went down. I mean, what do you think about that, and how does this play into this grander scheme of this police brutality, you know, issue right now? I mean, what is the implication here? Because what we're talking about now is these teen kids, you know, and they can't even go to a swimming pool party without really being, you know, subjected to this police state type of situation. I mean, this is, it's just getting so crazily intense and so personal now. And thankfully, as you mentioned in your interview, you know, thankfully for this technology with the phones and stuff, we actually see this kind of stuff happening. You know, so what do you think, how do you think race does play into this? I know that Brandon really noticed, you know, some tendencies there. And what do you think that we can kind of do to, you know, make this a message that we can talk about and confront, because it's something that's there and it's lying underneath and it's so invisible to a lot of people, but I think it really needs to come to the forefront. What do you think?
Well, I think we've seen with the protests and the riots in Baltimore and Ferguson and the peaceful protests in Cleveland just recently that this issue of racism is really coming to the forefront, as you said. I actually talked to Brandon earlier because he's, you know, CNN actually called me to try to get him on their show, which was kind of funny, that, you know, it shows how the alternative media is really rising and the mainstream media is trying to, you know, follow up as quickly as possible. But when I talked to Brandon, he told me that there were, like you said, Nick, protests earlier. He said that his mom actually wouldn't allow him to go to the protests, which I found, you know, a little comedic value in. Obviously still a serious issue, but you know, as you said, I think what I kind of didn't mention in the first part of the story that I told was that, like I said, when there was the, you know, physical confrontation between the mother from the neighborhood who was white and the, you know, black teenager who you saw, or no, it wasn't even the teenager supposedly who got tackled by the cop and everything. She wasn't even involved in that, according to Brandon. Instead, she was just an innocent bystander. And, you know, the cop said, oh, well, she, you're running your mouth, you know, therefore we somehow have the, you know, ability or the obligation to handcuff and detain you, which makes no sense whatsoever. And even in the video, you can hear the at least one of the cops, you know, to be fair, I don't think all cops are bad. And the other two seem to act somewhat professionally and, you know, compassionately in the situation. But you know, the cop said, oh, well, you're running your mouth. Well, it's kind of ironic then, because he was, you know, just earlier and even after dropping F-bombs and just acting completely authoritarian. So, you know, that is part of the story. And that's why all these, tying this back into the issue of race, why all these, you know, black kids, these black teenagers were targeted, apparently, because of the confrontation between the mother and then the other teenager. So apparently these cops just decided, or at least the one cop decided to just, you know, indiscriminately, you know, go after all these people and make them sit down and handcuff them, which I don't really see the legality in. But that's besides the point, because Brandon, you know, I don't like, you know, discriminating or you know, discerning between white and black, because I think, you know, it's unnecessary. But at the same time, Brandon was one of the only, if not the only, white person in this whole, you know, scenario, and the cops, you know, didn't make him sit down or anything. Not that they should have, but I just found it. He described it as Brandon described it as sort of just having this invisibility among all these other people. And then you also see one of the presumably one of the dads from the neighborhood just standing there while all this is going down, just, you know, being a bystander. And it's just, again, like you said in the beginning of this, it's incredible to watch. And especially at the beginning of the video when that officer does a barrel roll.
Yeah, when I first saw the video, I thought it was going to be like a cop blooper roll, but then it turned into something a lot more gruesome. But, you know, after watching that video, my first impression was like, you know, this girl literally got manhandled for being black and standing on the sidewalk. I mean, it's just like literally she didn't do anything wrong other than stand there. And okay, if he's going to say she ran her mouth, okay, that's fine. But since when did running your mouth become illegal and, you know, caused to get taken to the ground and thrown in, put your head pushed into the ground, all that stuff? I mean, completely unnecessary, man. But, you know, we've got go ahead.
I think it's a perfect metaphor for, you know, the attack of the First Amendment in the country right now, that, you know, you say something and you're sort of assaulted. So I think it's perfect for that. But also, again, like I said earlier, just to underscore this complete irony and this double standard between these, you know, figures of authority and us as, you know, the peasants, the citizens, that, like I said, the cop is running his mouth, doing the same exact thing, and there's, you know, no repercussions. The kids aren't yelling at him. Yet when the kids, you know, reply back, you know, with profanity, or I don't even know if any of them used profanity, but they just, you know, respond back to the cop, and he considers that, you know, a threat to him or whatever, and deems it necessary to, you know, assault these people. It's just completely, you know, nonsensical to me.
Exactly. It didn't make any sense to me either, and it's just crazy. Right now, my friend in Wisconsin was just sending me a news story about a kidnapper in a town down in Wisconsin, where the sheriff's department now has brought out basically, I don't know if you want to call it an MRAP or a Bearcat or whatever, but the sheriff's department is now using basically armored vehicles to hunt down kidnappers too. Down in Wisconsin. And I mean, it just seems like day after day, there's these crazy militant stories about cops doing these crazy things. And there was another story today where there was a clearly, you know, mentally ill man that was getting just beat repeatedly in the street with batons. It was very reminiscent of the Rodney King.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's just like, man, when is this shit going to stop?
Exactly. And it's also reminiscent, Nick, of a story that I covered a couple weeks back, or maybe a month back, and I'm sure you saw it as well. It was with Lucas Jewell. He was formerly a part or affiliated with Adam Kokesh and Adam Versus the Man. I think they're still friends, but he was part of Adam Versus the Man. And he was in Gainesville, Florida, I think, and this basic, you know, MRAP tank, whatever you want to call it, pulled him over, you know, for no apparent reason, or because he, you know, flicked off this vehicle to protest the police state that's, you know, encroaching in our country. And, you know, it was another basically viral video. And it's just absurd, this militarization of police and, you know, the further restricting of our freedoms.
You know, and before we let you go, I want to get your thoughts on two more things. First of all, is, you know, a lot of the remedy that we're being fed here, a lot of the solutions, you know, the quote unquote solutions, a lot of them are being, you know, piped down from the Obama administration. The first one was the body cams, and Obama got behind that, and it became basically an executive order type of thing. And now, you know, they're basically starting to implement that all around the country. So first off, you know, do you think that these problems can be fixed by the federal government, you know, trying to police and rein in all this stuff? Knowing that a lot of this stuff, you know, Program 1033 and a lot of these things are coming from the federal government, you know, so it's like the federal government's feeding all this militarized gear and all of this training and, you know, whatever it is, miscellaneous stuff that is changing the mentality of these local cops. you know, it's a lot of it's coming from the federal government. And then at the same time, it's like the federal government are the ones that are saying, oh, we have the solution. Here's how we fix it. I mean, what do you think of that? I mean, is it valid? And if it's not, what do you think are the solutions that we can, you know, look forward to?
I don't think it's a valid solution to solve the problem of government with more government. Of course, that's, you know, what liberals or whoever else want. But no, I don't think it's logical to fix a problem by further adding to the problem. Instead, you know, I'm a conservative, if that's, you know, the label people want to use. But I think that the best solution, and we haven't seen it, you know, actively working really well, I shouldn't say we haven't seen it working, but I'd say the best solution is the individual. And, you know, obviously, you know, recording police brutality isn't going to inherently fix the problem, but I think it definitely brings it, well, it does bring it more to light. And I think that's necessary. But I think we will need, you know, going forward, different solutions, because as you said, Nick, you know, three stories today, for example, of police brutality. It seems that this technology is almost a double-edged sword. Yes, we're seeing the police brutality, which is, of course, necessary. But at the same time, we're almost becoming desensitized to it because we're seeing it so often. And you have to wonder if that's almost, you know, agenda implemented by the media to sort of pacify us and assimilate us to what's going on. So I'd say, you know, the solution is to continue spreading the word and just nurturing peaceful relationships with these police, because like I said before, I don't think it's smart to stereotype one group of people. That's like saying, you know, all Muslims are terrorists or whatever. It's nonsensical. So I think, you know, by nurturing peaceful relationships, like I also did an interview recently with a police officer from Delaware. It was another viral video, and the police officer had the idea of holding up a sign. I'm sure you saw the video that said free hugs, and these cops went out into the public and, you know, offered free hugs to people to sort of, you know, show not all cops are bad. You know, we do have compassion, and I think that's really important. So ultimately, by nurturing more peaceful relationships and sort of opening the dialogue instead of just making it so one-sided, I think that combined with, again, this technology and keeping these people accountable, and not only cops, you know, politicians too, is, you know, critical to solving or at least remedying this problem.
Andrew, this is DB. Do you think that this is going to create a backlash against police in the communities and actually ask for a federal response, because it seems to be marching down that way?
The as in the response to this particular story in Texas?
No, just, you know, it's basically what it is it's a slippery slope, and it's like an avalanche that's gaining traction now. And, you know, people are starting to call for cops to be disarmed, wearing body cams, what have you. But then you have a guy like Sharpton saying, well, we need to get the federal government involved to fix this.
Well, I think Sharpton, we could have a whole nother discussion on him. You know, he's not paying his taxes yet. He's walking with clean hands around the nation, giving speeches and going to the White House and everything. But, you know, as far as a backlash, I mean, it seems like this issue of police brutality is really divided. And I think that's part of the problem why it's not fixed, I guess you could say, because, I mean, it all depends on the circumstances, I guess. You know, in this particular case, I don't think the circumstances were justified to, you know, treat these innocent bystanders as the cop did, but it all depends on circumstances. So I guess that's my answer for lack of anything better to say.
That's a good answer, man. I have one last thing before we let you go. I know you're gonna be on CNN tomorrow, right? So I want to let you get to bed early. So one last thing.
Before we got you on the call,
go ahead. We were talking about this $8.5 trillion that's gone, basically not missing but unaccounted for, from the Pentagon since 1996. I don't know if you saw this story over the past few days.
I saw the headline, but I didn't read it.
So yeah, basically they've the Pentagon has lost track of $8.5 trillion, and you know there was that other amount, the several trillion that went missing right before 9/11, and then that part of the Pentagon got blown up, and of course that's all infamous and stuff. But now this new information comes from a Reuters investigation. So what I had a question, my question for you is, the first thing that comes to your mind, what do you think this $8.5 trillion was spent on? At least part of it. What's the first thing you think it was spent on?
Oh man, so many options. I mean, foreign policy, as in wars, banking. I guess foreign policy, or maybe domestic policy. Now that after all we've been talking about with this, you know, police militarization. So, I mean, specifically, I have no idea. I'd have to read the article and learn more about it. But I guess, foreign policy or, you know, domestic beefing up of police would be my guess. But, you know, it's no surprise that government is, you know, just happens to lose all this money. You know, I'm sure they do the same with how they spend our tax dollars. So it's very reassuring, of course. And, you know, I guess the solution to that would be to simply go into probably the Federal Reserve computers, go get a good relationship with Janet Yellen and just, you know, type in some arbitrary numbers in the computer bank ledger, and then you could just fix the problem like that.
That's a great answer, man. Yeah, I was wondering where the money came from, too. I was like, $8.5 trillion? That's crazy. Where the hell did that money come from? Anyway, Andrew, thanks for calling in, man. Make sure everyone listening tonight, make sure you check out Andrew. He has an organization called Teen Take. Where can people find your work at?
Yeah, the best place to go is youtube.com/teentake, TEENTAKE. And that's where I post weekly videos. And that's also where I posted just this morning, actually, my interview with Brandon Brooks of the McKinney police pool party story, which we've been talking about. And you can view that there. It's already at about 40,000 views in like 10 hours. So it's doing quite well.
Yeah, it's already going viral, man. Great work. And thanks for calling in, man. And we'll have you back on the show, I'm sure, pretty soon here. You get some great interviews with some awesome people. We really like your work. And we'll have you back on soon. Peace, man.
Yeah. Thank you, Nick. Right back at you. Peace.
So yeah, make sure anyone listening, make sure you check out Andrew's work. I mean, we're talking about, you know, this is a 17-year-old teenage young man, and he's doing awesome work. And, you know, he got that interview with the kid that took the video in McKinney, Texas. I mean, this kid is really, he's doing really good work. So make sure you check him out. We're going to start moving on into our next discussion here, and we're joined by Luis Fernando Mises. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
So Luis is the guy behind the Emancipated Human. Not sure if everyone's heard about it. Hopefully you check them out now, because they do some awesome work down there about anarchy and agorism. And he has his own website and a media outlet, and you can catch interviews. I was recently on your show, and we talked about all kinds of good stuff, gardening and all kinds of things. Luis, what's been up with you, man? What have you been up to? Any new projects that we should know about?
Well, I recently, actually yesterday, just posted a really cool interview with Susan Meeham, and her daughter has epilepsy, and she has seizures, and she moved from Connecticut to Maine because that's where cannabis oil is actually legal. So that's the latest interview that I did, and she goes in length and she explains everything, you know, all the stuff that she had to go through, from, you know, the criminal government laws that prohibit children in Connecticut to benefit from this plant. So, you know, having to move a little girl, and, you know, they had to struggle some. So, and then she also explain how she basically now grows it in her backyard, and she's able to give her some of this. And like, it's, you know, the newest interview in YouTube, Emancipated Human. And I actually have a 45-second clip of how Susan is giving her cannabis oil as the little girl, Cindy Mae, is having a seizure. And that, like, within the 45-second clip, you know, it's like so amazing how the seizures go away just like if it was magic, just so fast. So this is a plant that has a huge potential for healing, and not just for healing, but also for other things, you know, like clothing and all sorts of medicine, and maybe even, like, I've heard of hempcrete, you know, making houses out of that. So it's kind of silly that it's illegal to grow that, you know, but funny enough, you know, we buy hemp from Canada or other countries, so it's kind of a stupid thing to do. But yeah, I mean, that's government for you.
It's pretty funny that we can have hemp products and stuff, and we can have hemp clothing and stuff, but we can't grow it ourselves in most states. Some states are starting to change. As you referenced, Maine is starting to come around. Out here in California, we've been, you know, we were the first pioneers with the decriminalization of marijuana and cannabis, and, you know, and even now in Kentucky they're starting to grow hemp. I don't know if you've seen that, but I think the people of the country, for so long we were held under this blanket of propaganda, this reefer madness, this it's a horrible drug, but here, smoke these cigarettes. The cigarettes are okay, but here's, don't smoke the weed though, you know what I mean? So we were under this blanket of propaganda for so long, you know. And it's really held down something that, as you were explaining, can be very, you know, medically valuable to a lot of people. And of course, all the other people, the stoners like myself that just smoke weed just because we like smoking it, you know, that's one thing. But for the people that actually benefit from it medically, to be deprived of it, I mean, that's insane. I mean, it's torture. It's violence being conducted against the people by way of law, right?
I think it's extremely criminal and evil, because she was explaining that due to legislation, the little girl Cindy May was unable to continue her actual development, you know, growth. So she's pretty severe. And then there's other little kids, you know, that they, because of the camp soil, they were able to keep their developmental growth. So, I mean, it's helping them actually be more functional, you know. So that, I mean, to keep that from people, I think that's really, really horrible. So, I mean, here in Texas, where I'm at, I am also part of the Libertarian Party, and what we do, you know, we've pushed some for that, and there, like, there's legislation, or not legislation, but there are bills that are going to be basically hitting the Senate that are trying to decriminalize the plant. And, you know, I got to talk to Jim Gray. He ran for vice president with the Libertarian Party along with Governor Johnson. And he said, Luis, we're going to see the end of decriminalization in our lifetime. So, you know, his words were pretty exciting to me. And at first, you know, this was 2 years ago, and I was like, well, I don't know about that, you know. But like now, like, he had the vision, and I'm seeing how, like, what he told me is actually happening.
Exactly. And, you know, in the past 2 years, we've seen huge steps forward. Like, you know, I mean, it's only been 2 or 3 years since Washington, Colorado started completely legalizing, even for recreational use. And now you got Alaska, you got D.C. Most of us in California feel like in 2016, it's going to be recreational here as well. And then here in California as well, you got Prop 47, which recently passed, and it actually decriminalized all personal drug use, which was a big, you know, undercutting of the drug war. And I think that's a big, you know, that's a big topic that I think that a lot of people can agree on, regardless of their political ideology, affiliation, and that kind of thing, is the drug war is something that I think we can all work together to, you know, bring that whole system down, because it's pretty obvious with the way the justice system works. And we just covered a story on the anti-media late last week about a guy in Baltimore. In 2012, he got caught with 5.9 grams of weed. And because he was on probation, he got sentenced to 20 years in prison for 5.9 grams of weed. And so these kind of egregious abuses of, you know, what should, you know, of course, using drugs should be a personal choice. It shouldn't be a criminal activity. And at the worst, if someone becomes addicted, then, you know, addiction is not a criminal activity. Addiction is a medical, you know, condition. So what do you think about the drug war What do you think about uniting multiple different factions and ideologies together to fight it? How do you think we can go about that? And do you think it's something that should be a priority for us?
I do think that it has to be a priority, and I do think that it's a battle that we can win. And I don't even like to call it a battle because I don't really enjoy fighting. It's a challenge that we can actually get over. And, you know, my mom is really conservative in those ways. But she was telling me, you know, maybe 25 years ago, we had a neighbor that used to put marijuana plants with some alcohol in a jar. And then, you know, after a few days, she will pull it out and rub her legs and, you know, relieve arthritis pain and all this stuff. And so, you know, I was explaining to my mom that I was going to do this interview with Susan Meehan. And she said, yeah, you know, that's a good plan that has good purposes. But, you know, maybe we shouldn't just legalize it for everybody. And I guess where I'm going with this, just hang on one second, like, I said, what other people do, as long as they don't hurt us, it's really not our problem. You know, like if they want to do it, then it's their deal. Like I was explaining it to her. And I guess what I'm going with it is, as long as we make it personal, if we really make it personal, we're able to change people's minds and hearts. Because, you know, they're always saying, well, don't take it personal, it's not this and that. But yes, I do think that we should make it personal with everybody in our circle. And obviously, we're not just going to be like the uncle, you know, crazy, just blobbering stuff. But I think that we need to create some awareness with our inner circles, because I think that's how the ripple effect takes place. You know, for those people that may not have, you know, the reach that you do, or maybe that I do at this point, you know, just with their acquaintances, with their friends, you know, just kind of like talk about it and create some awareness. And that really pays off.
Exactly, man. Exactly. And I think you said it perfectly. It's got to be personal. And like to me, I've had relative success with my, you know, convincing family members and friends and stuff of a lot of these, you know, at least convincing them and letting them know that, like, okay, there's a lot of, you know, corruption, there's a lot of cronyism and a lot of things going on. And now a lot of people that I, you know, that I am close with in my personal life also understand that these kind of things are going on, that something's got to be done about them, right? But from what I've found in my personal experience is that really breaking it down to like identify with the people in your individual circle is the most effective way of doing it. Everybody's got a different way of finding their way to, you know, the truth of what's going on. And it's kind of like that, you know, it's kind of how we understand that, like, using the same cookie cutter ideas on to use for everybody never works, right? So every single person that we talk to, if we're going to talk to them about, you know, freedom and, you know, foreign policy and these things that are kind of hard to stomach, you know, like the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this is stuff that you talk to random people on the street, man, it's pretty hard to like talk to people about this stuff, right? But I think the whole key to it and the whole key to spreading the message and creating those ripples, like you were saying, Luis, is identifying with individual people that you know and bringing these ideas of freedom back to like personal struggles that they're dealing with. Because in the end, a lot of the issues that we have, whether economically, culturally, you know, it can all be solved by, you know, changing the way that we think. And we don't even, there doesn't even have to be any kind of like crazy like rebellion or any violent revolution or anything like that. I mean honestly those things don't really work that well. They work a little bit, but they don't work that well. In many ways, I don't think they're worth the amount of resources in life and all that stuff that are involved. But I think a cultural revolution, I think, would be a lot more, you know, something that's a lot more feasible, a lot less risk. And it's already happening. Look at, as we were talking about, the cannabis issue, the public opinion has shifted, man. In the past 10 years, it's gone like a complete 180. And then you look at the gay rights issues, same exact thing. 10 years ago, it was completely unacceptable for most of the country to allow gay marriage. And now it's a complete opposite. Now most of the country thinks that it should be allowed. You know, so I think we're starting to see it happen. In the past 10 years, we see it like materializing. I think now we just got to keep the ball rolling and keep it going in the right direction, and don't allow it, as we were talking about with the last caller, where the, they try to come in with some kind of federal solution for us, where the federal government comes in like, hey, we're going to fix the problem with, you know, police brutality. It's like, dude, but you guys are the federal government. You guys are the same ones that supplied them with the weapons, you know? And so I think we just got to keep the ball rolling in the direction of decentralization. But I think, Luis, you know, I know that you're, I know that you're pretty, passionate about like agorism and stuff like that. And for those that don't know, it's basically a school of thought that believes in building like alternatives to society in a very free kind of way, a very voluntary kind of way. What do you think we can do as far as like from an agorism perspective, from like building new alternatives to what's, you know, what we're dealing with right now? Like what are some directions that we could go? And I know, like, for me, it's like hemp is really a good thing because that can be used for all kinds of different products and all kinds of different industrial purposes. So, like, first off, like, right off the bat, it's like hemp and, like, cannabis production would be something that I, like, you know, on a decentralized basis, which it is for the most part right now, you know, is something that would be, like, really good to counterbalance, you know, or counteract, you know, the centralization, bureaucratic, you know, corporatization of the entire, you know, social system of the country. What are some ways that we can go about, maybe like locally or on a small scale, that can just like subtly like break cracks into the system? What do you think?
I think the one of the most important things is healthcare. And the deal is, you know, we are so out of touch because we the person that pays and the person that get paid are so far away from each other that we are kind of disconnected with how that stuff works. So for as weird as it may sound, I think that health insurance is actually hurting us more than what it's helping us. So, you know, this would be one part of agorism that we practice. And I think that it would really benefit a lot of people. Like, number one, like, you know, because of my employer, we, you know, they do offer insurance, but I opted out, and maybe a lot of people do have it, maybe don't, but whatever. So we opted out, and when we need services, we pay cash. And what happens is several things. Number one, when you actually have to pay cash for stuff, you are going to be more mindful of when to use services, you know? Now, number two, when you do require services, several things happen here too. Number one, they give you discounts because you're paying cash. So that right off the bat is a great thing. Then number two, they're able to give you things that they can't when you have insurance. And also what happens is like you're able to see more doctors that are may not necessarily be mainstream doctors, you know? Like there's a lot of times their acupuncture may not be covered. Well, I like acupuncture and my body works well with acupuncture. So I just go with the lady and she does that for me, and you know, she, like, I pay her cash and she gives me a discount. A lot of things, you know, I mean, I don't know what the audience thinks about this, but you know, there's Reiki, there's chiropractic, there's even some healing work from people that do healing touch, you know, like all sorts of things that could happen. Yoga and massage therapists, you know rolfing, whatever, that is not just surgery. I mean, like the two main things that doctors get basically schooled on is how to prescribe medication and how to cut people's anatomies out of people's bodies. So, you know, that's how they solve problems instead of looking at the root. So in my opinion, a way to do agorism is empowering people through their own healthcare and not look for it as sick care. You know, once you're sick, you try to get better, but like, being proactive and changing their eating habits. And, you know, this whole healthcare thing is huge because you can create some sort of co-ops, you know, like we in our backyard, we have some garden, and then one of my wife's friends also popped in and helped us out with this, and she'll reap some benefits, and we give stuff away for free because it always ends up being much more than we need. And, you know, having fresh natural stuff right off of your backyard will beat any kind of produce from any store, even Whole Foods. We shop at Whole Foods.
Exactly, you know, man. I agree with you. I think we need to, you know, we need to be more proactive. And it's kind of, the American way of life, we've kind of slipped into that situation where we wait till we get sick before we try to do anything. we should be being like, you know, doing things more healthy and like also not relying on, like you said, the mainstream, you know, medical system. It's corrupted, man. It's messed up. You know, doing alternatives first to see if you can help yourself like that before you go do all that other stuff. Probably a good idea. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for all the calls. Luis, peace. Check out Emancipated Human. Catch you guys tomorrow, 5 days a week.
Yo, here we go.